It's amended. Next item, please, is, yes, we can do this, 520.
Adopt the Portland Parks and Recreation Integrated Pest Management Policy to prohibit the use of avitrol and other avicides on city-owned property and infrastructure.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. In early 2018, the city received multiple reports of suspicious crow deaths across Portland. The Oregonian reported on witnesses who saw nearly a dozen crows falling dead out of the sky. Clearly, someone or something was poisoning crows. Anyone who has come downtown in the early evening during the winter has likely seen the annual gathering of crows. It's a spectacle to be seen. Thousands of crows amassing in trees, on power lines, and on rooftops. This annual gathering is not welcomed by everybody. The crows leave behind a mess, generating calls and emails from residents demanding that the city do something. While we cannot and should not control the natural behavior of thousands of wild birds, the city's response has been measured. Additional cleaning of the streets and sidewalks by Clean and Safe, and the hiring of a team of falconers to fly hawks through downtown. To some in our community, those efforts were not enough, and we think a resident may have intentionally fed birds avitrol, the deadly commercial-grade neurotoxin that killed the crows. This is unacceptable. These poisons are inhumane, and these types of actions risk exposing the general public, local wildlife, and the entire food chain to a dangerous neurotoxin. Today, I'm proud to introduce representatives from both of my bureaus, the Bureau of Environmental Services and Parks and Recreation, to explain how we are working to prohibit the use of avitrol and other bird poisons on public property. With us this morning are Nicole Lyman, Pest Management Specialist with Parks and Recreation, and David Helzer, Environmental Specialist with BES, with a presentation. After their presentation, we have invited a panel that includes Bob Salinger, Stephanie Boyles Griffin, and Lisa Frisch. And after that, we're going to take a picture, if I can indulge the council. So, Nicole and David, welcome, and take it away.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
My name is Dave Helzer. I'm a biologist with Environmental Services.
Nicole, move the mic a little closer to you.
Thank you. Integrated Pest Management Program.
I'm just going to give you a brief overview to build on Commissioner Fish's introductory comments. A little background on the history of City Council actions for protection of birds and conservation of other wildlife here in Portland. The city has taken a number of actions over the years, going all the way back to 1986 with the adoption of the great blue heron as the official city bird. And a little more information on crows in Portland. Crows are a familiar urban bird. They're renowned for their intelligence. During the summertime, crows are all throughout our neighborhoods right now, spread out throughout the city in family groups raising young. During the winter, crows form up into larger flocks, and on winter nights, they form communal roosts, numbering in the tens of thousands sometimes, usually thousands of birds. They do this because there's safety in numbers, for protection from the elements, warmth, for example, protection from predators, and also in these wintertime roosts, they share information on food resources. Along with this comes a nuisance, which is crow droppings on the sidewalk. Downtown Clean and Safe has used a couple of non-lethal strategies to address this nuisance of bird droppings on the sidewalks, including using, as Commissioner Fish described, falconers who have trained hawks. And these trained hawks harass the crows as they're settling in for the night and kind of herd them into safe areas, including the parks behind City Hall. And that's what this photo here illustrates, is the wintertime crow roost on a snowy night, taken by a representative, actually, of the Portland Police Bureau. So avitrol is an avicide. Well, what is an avicide? An avicide is a class of pesticide used to control birds. Avitrol is a lethal form of bird control. It's a neurotoxin. We've had several crow poisoning events, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, with dozens of dead and dying crows found. falling from the sky, notably in 2014 and 2018. In those instances, it was confirmed that Avitrol was the cause of the crow deaths. It is unknown who used the product. The Oregon Department of Agriculture is investigating that. Avitrol and other avicides represent some significant risks to other birds. For example, birds that are not the target of the control, wild birds can consume the bait, the poison bait. Predators then can consume, such as eagles or falcons, can consume birds who've consumed the poison bait and absorb it that way. It's also a risk for pets who may consume the bait. And finally, it's a risk for people. In fact, the label for this restricted use avicide prohibits it being used in an area where children are present or an area where children may have access. I'm going to turn it over to Nicole now.
All right, thank you. As many of you know, Parks oversees thousands of acres of land, from natural areas to botanical gardens, golf courses, and developed parks, each with varying sites and with specific needs, usabilities, and public expectations of uses. Because of this, Parks has an integrated pest management program to help manage the land. It's available to staff and the public, and is also adopted by many city bureaus. What is IPM? Well, it's a process, and it can be seen as a playbook with multiple tools in your toolbox to use when you have a pest, and it can also help you prevent pests from emerging as well. When a pest arises, the IPM program helps the staff decide if they should control the pest in the first place, what happens if they don't control the pest, and the best way to control it. So first we look to local city, state, federal agencies such as Soil Water Conservation, Oregon Department of Agriculture, EPA, USDA, and local universities on the best science available for pest management. Some control options that we utilize are cultural, physical, mechanical, manual, biological, and chemical, but usually it's a combination of a few of them. Once we make the application, then we monitor and the results and determine if we need to repeat. Parks has recently added an avian management policy to our IPM program, reinforcing Parks and other city bureaus' stance of no chemical harm to birds. And it also guides employees to review BES best management practices for scheduling maintenance to limit harm to nesting birds. Why have we gone this route? Well, the city cannot supersede Oregon Department of Agriculture's regulations, who enforce state and federal regulations regarding pesticide use. But the city can model actions we would like to see taken by the public. And we can also use this to promote awareness of city's stance on avicides. So we are here today to request the city require other bureaus to adopt Portland Parks and Recreation's IPM policy on avian management.
Thank you very much. It was very succinct. If there are no questions from my colleagues, we'll invite up our panel. Thank you very much. Bob Salinger, Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that both Bob and Audubon have been indispensable partners in developing this policy. Stephanie Boyles Griffin, Senior Director and Wildlife Biologist with the Humane Society of the United States. And Stephanie, welcome to Portland. It's a nice convergence of your being here and a chance for you to testify, and we thank you for taking the time. And Lisa Frisch with the Portland Business Alliance. With that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Good morning. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for Portland Audubon Society. And I would just add, Tara from Center for Biological Diversity is also here today. I would like to testify as well. So thank you very much for this resolution. We are here today to express our strong support and appreciation for the work that has been done on this, particularly to Commissioner Fish and his staff, Jamie Dunphy, and to city staff, James Allison, Dave Heltzer, Paul Ketchum, Caitlin Lovell, Nicole Lyman. A lot of work has gone into this, and we really appreciate the work that has been done. These types of avicides are dangerous, they're indiscriminate, they're cruel, and they're inhumane, and they have no place on our landscape whatsoever, and particularly on an urban landscape. Dave's told you a little bit about avitrol, but I want to tell you a little bit more. It is an avicide, a bird pesticide. It is a neurotoxin. It is put in bait, and birds are lured in, and they eat it. It is advertised as humane. It is anything but humane. It is designed to trigger an alarm response in birds. Birds seizure, they convulse, they scream, they lie on the ground on their sides and their back, their legs pedaling in the air, and then for the most part, they eventually die. That can go on for minutes, it can go on for hours. The pesticide takes sometimes a long time to kick in, so birds can disperse over wide areas before they actually are impacted and then literally fall out of the sky and die on the ground. It's marketed as non-lethal, but in fact, if you read the EPA registration and label, it says explicitly, quote, birds that react in alarm usually die. It is inhumane and it is lethal. Applicators are required to keep the poison area free of people and pets until all poisoned birds are collected. However, this is totally unrealistic. It's a joke. It can take an extended period of time to kick in, and a flock of birds or an individual bird that has consumed this poison can travel miles before it actually feels the impacts. This means that birds can get scattered over miles and miles of our city after they've been poisoned in our neighborhoods, in our parks, in our community. And the risk to people and pets and other wildlife is particularly high because if you think about the mechanism of death, these birds are lying on the ground, falling out of the sky, lying on the ground, screaming, pedaling, flapping their wings involuntarily. That's the kind of response that draws attention. So if you're a red-tailed hawk or a peregrine falcon or a dog or a cat or a child, that's the kind of thing that might cause you to come and pick up these birds. And by the way, this item, this compound is both orally and dermally toxic, so it's toxic to ingestion, it's toxic to the touch. This is really scary stuff, and yet it is sold and legally used. So I want to tell you a little bit about the two events that we had, because I think it's important to get it on the record. The first one was November 24th, 2014, the day before Thanksgiving. Dead crows started showing up at Chapman and Lounsdale Squares. A little while later, they were discovered in Waterfront Park, a 25-plus block area covered in dead crows. We started getting calls. The city started getting calls. The city responded. The state responded. The feds responded. Audubon responded. We were all down there the day before Thanksgiving collecting dead crows and trying to figure out what went on. The fire department responded and took air samples because there was a concern that this was a terrorist attack, that somebody had put something into our environment, and this was actually terrorism. It is terrorism, but different kind than what people were thinking at that moment, but it was scary enough. We set up an emergency hotline. We called in extra volunteers, and we called in extra staff, and for the next several days throughout the holiday weekend, we collected dead crows and responded to every single report of sick and injured birds. Actually went out into the field and did that. Our wildlife care center did that and collected them and then got them off to the labs for shipping, for testing, and it was, in fact, confirmed that this was avitrol. But we didn't know what it was at the time. And that's one of the really scary things, is you don't know until several days, sometimes weeks later, after they get done with the testing. The second event was in late January of 2018. People in northeast Portland, near MLK and northeast Jessup, witnessed a flock of crows flying overhead, and suddenly birds literally started dropping from the sky, crashing into the ground. Some were dead when they hit the ground. Others screamed and twitched and seizured and convulsed and then died. A reporter that covered it said it was one of the worst things that she had ever seen. Again, a massive mobilization, city, state, feds, Audubon. We again set up a hotline. We again went out for days, actually weeks afterwards, looking at sick and dying birds to see if this was a continuation of the pattern. We are still getting calls today from that announcement of if you see sick and dying birds, call us. People are still calling saying, I saw a sick crow yesterday. I'm worried because I think it might have been poisoned. There might be poison in my neighborhood. Now, this is obviously not something that's associated with that incident, but it shows how it gets into the psyche of our community. We put up a $1,000 reward on each one of these, but we didn't identify anybody who had actually done it, unfortunately. These incidents have occurred in other cities as well. There was a big incident in Bend several years back in which they poisoned over a senior center and birds lay dying on the rooftop in the ground. They measured the temperature of that ground where those birds were lying and convulsing. It was over 140 degrees. Anybody that tells you this is a humane way to die hasn't really looked at this product. You can imagine a wild animal lying out in the open on 140 degree ground, twitching and convulsing. I want to call out our Wildlife Care Center because this is the kind of stuff that our Wildlife Care Center responds to. We have a Wildlife Care Center volunteer here today, Carrie May, in the front row. We have over 100 volunteers and several staff. We deal with 3,000 injured animals a year and 10,000 wildlife phone calls. These are among the scariest types of situations we see. People ask me, is it scary to work with wild animals, eagles and bears? No, it's scary to work with poisoned animals because you can't identify them as they come in the door. They don't come in with a tag saying, do not handle me because I have a dermal poison on my body. That's what really worries me with our staff and volunteers is this kind of a risk that we have to respond to. And it's not a theoretical risk. It's a real risk. I and another staff person were poisoned in the 1990s handling birds that were poisoned with a different compound called Ritterbird that was a dermal poison, a contact poison. Red tail came in, was identified as hit by car. In fact, it was covered in this compound, and we both wound up showing symptoms of that poison. It is a real, real risk to the community, and it's a real risk to the people that respond. I particularly call out our care center today because we're going to go through a big expansion process next year, and this is the kind of thing that we're set up to do. We provide a really big service to this community, and we'd love to have council support in the importance of this facility as we go forward with that expansion process. Your endorsement will be helpful in that so we can continue to respond to these kinds of events. So I want to end today by simply noting that this is a very important step that you're taking. I want to note that the city does not poison birds, and we appreciate that. And although this applies on city property, and the city isn't using these poisons, this will prevent anybody from even considering it in the future on city property. But more importantly, it sends a message to our community that these poisons are unacceptable, they're dangerous, and they don't have any place here. It sends a message to the state that they need to do a better job regulating these incidences and following up on them. And also perhaps giving local authority so that we can regulate them better in our own communities. And finally, it sends a message to the EPA, which is responsible for licensing and re-registering these pesticides periodically. We hear constantly that we don't have any data about these pesticides from the PPA. We don't know that they're causing problems. Well, it's very, very hard to actually identify non-target incidences like the ones we see and the problems that they create because they don't get well documented. So what you're doing today is documenting what occurred. You're putting the city on record, as other cities have as well. And when this does come up for re-registration, hopefully what we'll see is EPA making the right decision the next time and getting these products, this product in particular, but these kinds of products off the market permanently and forever. So thank you very much for all your work on this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Boyles Griffin, and I serve as the senior scientist in the Wildlife Protection Department at the Humane Society of the United States in Washington, D.C. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I also serve as a science and policy director for the Bott-Stever Institute for Wildlife Fertility Control. That institute serves as sort of the world's premier clearinghouse on anything and everything having to do with that field of wildlife management. In 2011, I was appointed by Governor Merrick Mayor Martin O'Malley to serve as a commissioner on the Maryland Wildlife Advisory Commission. Just wanted to kind of give you all a little bit of background about myself. I've been working in the field of human-wildlife conflict resolution for about 20 years. During that time, I've worked with federal, state, government agencies, municipalities, and corporations to implement humane, sustainable programs. For instance, I did my master's thesis working with the Virginia Department of Transportation to resolve conflicts with beavers in a humane and sustainable way where they dam road culverts and cause roads to wash out. And we're currently working with a team of my associates and colleagues at HSUS with the Bureau of Land Management to find ways to manage wild burrows at a herd management area in northwestern Arizona using fertility control vaccines. So, but on behalf of the HSUS and our Portland, Oregon members and constituents, we really appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony this morning and to express our strong support for the proposed resolution to adopt the Portland Parks and Recreation's integrated pest management policy that prohibits the use of avitrol and other avicides on city-owned property and on infrastructure. As Bob has already said and was presented by the Parks Department, avitrol is a restricted use toxic chemical used to kill pigeons and other birds. That's what it's registered for. It's promoted as a flock frightening agent or a repellent, but it is in fact a nervous system poison that can indiscriminately kill any bird or any mammal that consumes it, including livestock and even companion animals. Birds who consume it suffer convulsions and often die very slow, painful deaths. It is not only really traumatic for the birds to die this way, as Bob stated, but it's also really traumatic for people, especially children, who witness or try to help dying birds when they're found in public spaces. These kind of grisly events have been reported on by our constituents, and it's been covered in the news media over many years this avicide has been in use. Me personally, when I first entered this realm of work that I do now, one of the first things I got called off on is birds falling out of the sky and gathering them up and trying to figure out what was wrong with them, seeing the bait around. I'd never seen avitrol before. I thought it was just corn that had a little bit of green matter on it. I had no idea it was a toxicant, and it is a dermal toxicant, and I was probably picking it up with my bare hands just trying to keep another bird from consuming it and was putting myself at risk doing so. I know better now, but what if it had been a kid, you know, and not me? So, you know, users claim that these distressed behavior of poison birds actually frightens them away and their flock members away, but any frightening effect of avitrol on surviving birds is very short-lived, and because birds remaining in the area return quickly and reproduce, and that's basically why killing birds by any means, not just avitrol, it's not only cruel, it fails to address the root cause of whatever the problem may be, leading to an endless killing, an unnecessary killing cycle. So from the HSUS's perspective, when impacts are being experienced from birds aggregating in areas due to attractants or an area that's accessible for nesting and loafing, we encourage cities to implement a humane, integrated approach to mitigate these impacts and manage bird populations. For example, many of the conflicts with birds can be tied to feeding, so we support efforts by cities to curb the intentional or unintentional feeding of birds by educating the public and proactively removing food attractants. We also recommend using a wide variety of devices available to permanently prevent birds from roosting and nesting in areas where they're not wanted. Our decades of work on conflict resolution with communities across the U.S. demonstrates to us that these kinds of integrated and comprehensive approaches to managing issues with birds and other wildlife are the most successful in providing long-term resolution and preventing unnecessary killing of both target and non-target animals. And finally, we support the use of fertility control methods, like the product OvaControl, to stabilize and reduce the size of flocks over time when it's necessary and appropriate to do so. OvaControl is a bird contraception that comes in the form of kibble-type food, which causes birds who eat it to lay eggs that would fail to develop. So it's humane, it's sustainable, doesn't always have to be used, but in situations where it might be beneficial to slowly reduce the flock size over time, it's something that's an option for cities. And for these reasons, all of the above, we strongly support the proposed resolution and applaud the City of Portland for its leadership in establishing a humane and compassionate standard for mitigating conflicts with birds that we hope corporations, businesses, and private property owners in and around Portland will also soon follow. Avitrol has been banned in Great Britain, And two cities in Canada have also banned it, Red Deer and Halifax. It's also restricted in New York, the state, and banned in New York City, San Francisco, Fort Collins, and Boulder, Colorado. We are thrilled that the city of Portland will now serve as a trailblazer for the development and implementation of humane and effective bird management policies, and hope to see these policies replicated in other cities and towns in Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, and beyond. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment on the proposed resolution this morning, and I'm happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. It's a great honor to have you testify before us.
Thank you.
Now we have up Lisa Frisch from the Portland Business Alliance. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. My name is Lisa Frisch, and I'm the Downtown Retail Program Director for Portland Business Alliance and Downtown Clean and Safe. I'm here today to provide information on city-approved methods that we have employed to minimize nuisance issues related to crows in the downtown area. I do have a video I'm going to show halfway through my testimony. In 2015, on our annual business census and survey data collection, we were surprised to note that many of our respondents felt that downtown was not as clean as it was in the past. As you know, Clean and Safe spends over $1 million with a contract with Central City Concern to provide janitorial services in downtown Portland. We hadn't noticed a huge difference in the amount of litter that we were picking up in downtown, but we did notice that the crow population was booming, something that we hadn't previously seen. In some high crow population areas, streets, sidewalks, furnishings were carpet bombed with bird droppings. Our cleaning staff power washes every sidewalk in the Clean and Safe District twice a year, but we started to power wash every night in high crow population areas. Two issues that presented, we power wash overnight so as not to disturb pedestrian activity during the day, but crows dirty the sidewalks around 7 a.m. in the morning. Additionally, crows were causing issues in the cold weather months, and we cannot power wash during freezing conditions as it would lead to unsafe conditions on the sidewalk. In 2015, Portland Mall Management, Inc. partnered with Clean and Safe to contract with a company that provided a Zamboni-like sidewalk scrubber that we dubbed the Poopmaster 6000. And I have a video that aired on NBC Nightly News about the Poopmaster 6000 that I'm going to show you.
In the dark downtown Portland, you might not be able to see the crows, but you can definitely see the mess they leave behind. The challenge was how to clean after the crows leave at like 7 in the morning. You know, they wake up and they do their thing and they leave. The crows roost here in the winter. Their droppings coat everything from statues to sidewalks. But today, and 5 days a week from now until spring, this little green machine is making a difference. It's called the Poopmaster 6000 and comes complete with a rather guilty-looking crow on the front. Portland Mall Management is renting the Poopmaster for a six-month trial. It cleans up all the droppings in the mall area and works in wet or dry weather. People we talk to seem to appreciate it.
I think it would beautify the area. It would take the stench away because it does kind of smell. And it would just make the city more attractive.
At the very least, it's getting a lot of attention.
People come up and want to take a picture. Like, yeah, sure, you know. Most part, they're liking it.
Thank you. A little bit of humor for today's important and serious topic. The Poopmaster 6000 cleaned the sidewalk, but it was a slow process. You saw how the machine was very slow. It was very limited in scope and very expensive, $30,000 to rent for a season. The Poopmaster did make a return appearance in late 2016, but at that time we sought a more sustainable solution. Since that time, we worked with Integrated Avian Solutions to help direct the crow populations from high pedestrian areas instead to green spaces where they might have a more enjoyable experience. Integrated Avian Solutions employs falconry to manage nuisance bird populations by allowing a raptor, in this case a Harris hawk, to fly near groups of crows.
Oh, you didn't say murders of crows. I was waiting for that. It's in the document here.
I think it might not be politically correct crow term.
Ooh.
I read something online that some people have asked us not to use that term. So
interesting. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sorry about that.
It is the proper term, though.
It was the proper term, but might not be a correct term. The presence of the raptor makes the birds roost elsewhere. There are no sounds emitted. There is no contact between the birds. We just wrapped up our third year of the program, and you may have noticed that bird droppings have diminished in the central city, while Waterfront Park is a new haven for crows at night. We want to thank the City of Portland for partnering with us on these innovative solutions. Through the journey, we never employed any avicide or avitrol or any tactics that were not supported by the city or the Audubon Society. We are always looking for innovative solutions that crop up to issues in downtown Portland and hope to act as a model for other enhanced service districts. We are very proud to show our successful results, and we'll be rolling out the next phase of our crow abatement program this October. Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleagues, questions for our distinguished panel?
I've learned a lot today. Thank you for being here.
That's a superb presentation. Thank you. That concludes our formal presentation. Carla, has anyone signed up?
Yes, we have two people signed up.
Very good.
We have Maggie and Tara Cornelis.
Come on up. Name for the record, please.
Hello, thank you, Commissioners and Mayor. I am Dr. Tara Cornelisi, and I'm a senior scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're a national nonprofit where we work to conserve biological diversity. We have many offices around the country, but I'm based here in Portland. So under that hat, as well as a resident of Portland and someone who loves wildlife, I just would like to provide some quick comment. Basically, I would just like to express my support and appreciation for this great resolution banning avitrol and other bird poisons. With the current mass extinction crisis, you know, the UN report just came out recently, a million species are at risk of extinction, you know, and because of human activities. We're really lucky that any wildlife can survive with us in our cities particularly. And so instead of poisoning them with dangerous chemicals, we should really appreciate how birds can add to our human-dominated landscape, including crows and pigeons. They're very unique animals with lots of really interesting behavior and intelligence. Overall, the Center for Biological Diversity advocates nationally against the use of dangerous pesticides, particularly that impair either non-target organisms or organisms that really add to the landscape, like bees, aquatic invertebrates, and of course, birds. So we strongly support this resolution and are happy that Portland can once again provide an example for the rest of the state. I was happy to hear about that, as well as the country, and as Bob mentioned, an example for the EPA for these how these dangerous chemicals should not be used and should not be re-registered to eliminate these kinds of harmful toxins. So I just wanted to say thank you for passing this resolution on behalf of myself and the Center for Biological Diversity.
Thank you very
much.
I want to thank all the people who came to testify on this issue. And is there any way to prevent this chemical from being used on private property as well? Cruelty to animals and the spread of cancer-causing dermal toxins is not a good thing. So it's great that the city wants to do it on city structures and sidewalks, but what can be done to ban it from private use? And also, is that Zamboni electric or oil-based? And couldn't they just use like a carpet cleaner thing? You know, the carpet cleaner squirts the warm water and then vacuums it up, and it's not quite as big. It doesn't cost $30,000 for a carpet cleaner.
Thanks.
And so private, ban it for on private property?
It's regulated by the feds. It's one of those areas where we have very limited role in terms of private conduct other than using the bully pulpit. For example, talking to our friends at the port and making sure that they don't use these particular pesticides and others. But at the end of the day, we don't have a regulatory, we have a very limited regulatory function on in terms of private actors. So what we're hoping is to set an example of how we use this in the public sphere and then use the bully pulpit to get others to follow us.
Okay, I just want to mention that the skin is like the lungs. It's very permeable. And recently they did a study on sunscreen, and there's some chemicals in sunscreen that get in the system. So this dermal toxin can pass through the skin very easily, and we need to stress that for people who are still using it on private property, is that it can, like they say, travel, because the birds fly, so it'll travel from private property to public property.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you both for your testimony.
Yeah, appreciate thank it. You both, and I will just say that this state, your state legislator would be the appropriate person to talk to about regulating chemicals at the state level. And I would encourage you to connect with your state representative and state senator and have them move forward on this. And I think the city will be an example that they will be able to follow.
Okay.
Very good. Colleagues, any further discussion? I'd just like to say one thing, Commissioner Fish, while you have your proponents here, some of whom have traveled a long distance to be here today, and we're very grateful and honored by your presence. I thank you for bringing this to the City Council, and it is a very important issue. It might not be one that's front and center in everybody's minds, but I know that when the winter comes around again, this is a question that will pop up again, and we're going to get lots of inquiries, and we're going to get lots of emails. And I hope what the public hears today is that the livability issue is being actively engaged around by Portland Clean and Safe, the Portland Business Alliance, and others in the downtown area, and that we have employed humane approaches to addressing this problem. I just want to say, and the testimony today just underscores what I already believe, Commissioner Fish, which is this is the right thing to do, because it is the wrong thing to do to use toxins to poison wildlife under any scenario where the main issue that people are concerned about is poop on the ground. That we can deal with through other means, and it does not require us to use inhumane toxins. I also just want to underscore the testimony that we heard from two of the folks this morning, which is that we are being very naive, foolish even, if we believe that using neurotoxins on wildlife will not eventually impact us as humans. And so I would strongly support this. I did have one question of staff, if I could ask them to come back, or let me ask the question, and maybe whoever
Nicole and David, are you still here?
They're still here.
Why don't you just come forward real quick?
Great.
And by the way, Nicole Linehan's title is Pest Management Specialist with the Parks Bureau. So we're very fortunate to have a dedicated staff person whose job it is to review all these policies citywide. And David is environmental specialist with BES.
Well, and thank you for being here and sharing your good work with the City Council and with the public. It is my understanding that at this point we're not using Avitrol, but I heard reference to another chemical that suppresses the ability of birds to lay eggs. We're not using that either, are we?
Yeah, that was mentioned by the representative from Humane Society. I think it's called, the product name is Ovo Control, and we are not currently using that through the IPM.
Good. And then the second question, the main purpose of this, and the reason Commissioner Fish is bringing it to council, is to ensure that all of our city bureaus are on the same page with regard to this. And it's my understanding that none of the other city bureaus at this particular point have been using those chemicals either. Is that correct?
Yes, we reached out to all the representatives that oversee integrated pest management for the bureaus, and no one reached back saying that they did use them.
Great. And then I had just sort of a question of interest, just because it was raised. So we the Clean and Safe folks, the Portland Business Alliance, and others have brought falconers in to, and if I understood this correctly, to herd the crows into a larger green space. So they actually have targeted locations, or how does that work?
Yeah, the project between Downtown Clean and Safe and the Falconers, they've mapped out a grid of areas for priority for keeping the crows out of, and that includes the transit malls.
Okay.
and then identified safe areas. And so that includes the waterfront, you know, the green spaces. So the falconers use their Harris's hawks. When the crows are coming in to spend the night, when they're coming in to settle in at dusk, they're kind of, their metabolism is winding down and they're looking for a safe place that's free of predators. And that's when the falconers start flying their hawks. And having a hawk on the same street where you're thinking about spending the night is, doesn't work for the crows.
Okay, so it's eventually then just a learned behavior that this area has hawks, whereas this area over here they come to learn don't have hawks. Is that
it's partly a learned behavior. It's a couple times per week, so it's partly an association that this area isn't safe, but it's also continued pressure because there's so many birds involved that they need to keep the pressure up. So that it's an ongoing process throughout the winter. So it's a mix of learned and ongoing pressure.
And then one just general interest question, and then I promise I'll stop. This was a really interesting presentation and something completely different. Commissioner Fritz, they come together as a colony in the winter. Why? Why do they do that?
So there's a number of reasons they do that. There is safety in numbers. They seek out areas that are a little bit more sheltered from the elements because they need to regulate their internal temperatures and conserve energy. So we have a heat island effect in the center of the city, so it's a little bit warmer in the central city. They are seeking safety in numbers. There are some studies and hypotheses that crows, who are highly intelligent, share information in these roosts about where they're finding food, so they can go out and find more food the next day.
Interesting.
And there's another hypothesis that the lights in the downtown city core help them feel a little safe because they can see predators coming. A primary predator is like a great horned owl, so they can see that animal coming. So there's a variety of reasons they do this, but it's mostly about safety and survival.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for indulging me. Very interesting. Any further questions? This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading.
No, this is a resolution. This is a,
it's a resolution.
Resolution, Mayor. In
you're right. Sorry. Call
following, the roll. Following the vote on the resolution, I would beg your indulgence for a quick photograph.
You bet. Call the roll, please, Carla.
Fish. Let me begin by thanking Nicole and David for an excellent presentation. Bob Salinger from Audubon, Stephanie Boyles Griffin from the Humane Society, and Lisa Frisch from the Portland Business Alliance. It was an all-star lineup. Really interesting testimony. Thank you for being here today. And Stephanie Boyles Griffin, you have an open invitation anytime you're on the West Coast to come and join us. Thanks for your great work, and thank you for honoring us with your presence today. This is a proud day for the BES and Parks families. When the mayor made the decision to put both bureaus under my watch, what we began to look for is opportunities where they could collaborate more. And there's so many natural areas of overlap in the work that Parks and BES do. This is a splendid example of where a partnership works for the benefit of the whole city, so I'm very proud of that. I want to remind my colleagues that today's resolution is one of several actions the city has taken to protect birds. This includes adopting a bird-safe building policy, bird-friendly vegetation management practices, a green roof building requirement, a bird-safe resource guide, and then most recently in our budget, approving funds to begin work on reducing light pollution. I'm proud to serve on a body that regularly demonstrates their commitment to nature in the city, and it's one of the things that makes our city so special. By our vote today, we're making a clear statement that Avitrol has no legitimate function in the city of Portland. The City of Portland is proud to lead by example, reaffirming that we do not and will not use this deadly poison, and we encourage others in our community to follow our lead. Thanks to Jamie Dunphy on my team for all the good work that he did and others, I'm very proud today to vote aye.
Hardesty?
I also want to really appreciate the guest speakers that came and spoke about this issue today. I can't vote on this without actually mentioning Poopmaster 6000 because I never thought I would hear that term in this particular chamber in this particular position. But I bring Poopmaster 6000 to light because as we start thinking about innovation and how we move to this clean energy future. I'm looking forward to us being able to create something that costs a whole lot less than $30,000 and actually takes into account the innovation of folks who live right here in the Portland metro area to find a solution that works for both people and animals in the city of Portland. And so I absolutely vote aye.
You daily.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fish for bringing this item. Of course, I'm pleased to support it. I don't want to miss this opportunity to comment on how unfortunate it is that although Oregon is thought of as a leader on environmental issues and a green state, that we're really lagging behind on this issue, and in fact the state preempts us on banning pesticides and herbicides, specifically Roundup, glyphosate, at a local level. And I know there were a couple bills down in Salem. There have been no votes, and there's no additional hearing scheduled, so I don't think that's a good sign. So I want to encourage the public, if this is a issue you care about, please contact your legislators. And I want to encourage Salem to, if we're not going to have a statewide ban, please allow municipalities to decide for themselves what they're going to allow to be used within their jurisdictions. I vote aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for bringing this forward. Thank you to everybody who's spoken, who's done a lot of work on this project. This has, to my knowledge, never been on the City Council's legislative agenda priorities, and so it seems like even though the legislature, as was mentioned, is currently in session, we should be starting the new list of things that we'd like our lobbyists to work on in Salem to, as Commissioner Udaly said, at least take away the preemption so that we could ban these toxic products. I would have to say that the presentations were a lot more graphic and disturbing than the ones when we were talking about banning neonicotinoids, which affect bees, and this obviously illustrates that these toxins do cause harm in little creatures and big creatures and humans as well. And so thank you for bringing this to our attention. Aye.
Wheeler.
Oh, and just one more thing. I did affirmatively get from the Water Bureau that we definitely do not use it.
Wheeler.
This is good work. I appreciate it, Commissioner Fish and your team and everybody who testified today, and the great work from our bureaus. Thank you very much. I vote aye. The resolution's adopted.
Quick photograph, Mayor.
Sure.
Nicole and David, would you join us here?